Michael Monteith, one of the authors on this, was a summer intern with us. He was a physics student at Loughborough University in England. Some of you may know his grandfather, John Monteith, one of the giants in environmental physics, so it was fun to have John Monteith's grandson working with us for a little while. I usually learn things best that embarrass me most, and some of the things I'll talk about today relate to that. About 25 years ago, a student came into my office and claimed that you could measure thermal conductivity of soil with a transient technique without ever knowing the heat capacity or diffusivity. And I told him I thought he was absolutely wrong. In the process of proving that I was right, I proved that I was mostly wrong. And so that's that problem, though, still is around and one that continues to be of interest. Many of you know the technique that he was talking about, where you take a needle that has a heater inside of it and a temperature sensor, you apply heat to the needle, you measure the temperature, you plot the temperature rise versus the logarithm of time, and you get approximately a straight line. And the thermal conductivity of the soil is related to the inverse of the slope of the line. Now, I say an approximately straight line because it isn't exactly a straight line, and it's that slight curvature that has that's of interest here. We can look at the curvature in terms of the solution to the differential equation for a line heat source. We get the temperature rise is directly proportional to the heat input Q, inversely proportional to thermal conductivity K, and then has an exponential integral that in terms of the radius out to where you're measuring temperature, the diffusivity D, and time T. And if we expand that exponential integral, as shown on the bottom of the slide, we get the log term that we saw earlier, and then we get some more terms that have diffusivity in them. And those additional terms have to damp out in order for that straight line relationship to apply. And so I was a little bit right in saying that we might need some information about diffusivity. Time is in the denominator, so at long times, those higher order terms tend to become small enough to neglect. But one of our points of focus was to try to make this measurement in as short a time as possible. So we've tried to take those into account. A better solution that actually fits the needles that we use for these measurements is one that that Klutenberg and his colleagues published a few years ago. And it's a longer integral, but if we make some assumptions and say that we'll take the point R where we make the measurement to be the radius of the needle that we're using, then we can we get another integral that we've called the Klutenberg integral that is a little bit longer than the exponential integral, but similar to that, and one that we can tabulate just like we would the exponential integral, and we've tried to use this solution. And if we compare the Klutenberg integral to the exponential integral, we see that that at long times those correspond to small values of u, that we get the same thing with both of them, and at very short times they come together again. But at these intermediate times, the curvature is a little different, and we thought that that might help us out. One other solution that has been around for a long time that we've used a number of places to try to fit these data is the one that comes from Blackwell. You see that it's pretty similar to the other solutions that we've seen. This is his longtime solution. has the same log term that we've talked about before, has a term B that has in it explicitly the contact resistance for the probe. And any time that we make a measurement in a granular medium, we have a contact resistance between the probe and the surroundings. And that the term B you can see, though, is just an offset term. All that happens is that we get a temperature higher than we would expect. It's a constant term. There are some terms in log T over T and 1 over T. When we actually make the measurements or try to make the measurements, it's pretty difficult to sort out the differences between curvature of those two things. And in some cases, even difficult to sort out the curvature at all. So these were the differential equations that we tried. Now, any time that you have a nonlinear equation like that, you have to have a nonlinear inverse procedure to get out the parameters for it. And we used a fairly standard nonlinear procedure, the Marquardt procedure. And Michael did a little bit different thing on this than we sometimes do, in that he programmed it up so that he could start at different points. You know that in these nonlinear inverse procedures, you're never guaranteed to get the global minimum. And so here we plot the error that we get to the fit of the data as a function of diffusivity. This is for one data set, a data set on glycerin. And you can see that we get to a lot of different minima. Some of them really are lower than others, and when we get to the ones that are lowest, that those come out to be about the thermal conductivity of glycerin, the way we'd expect. But there are lots of ones that don't get to that minimum. So indicating some problems with using that nonlinearly squares procedure to get a solution to this. Now, we could just do it this way. We could do a brute force thing and have a lot of different starting points. But we were wanting to do this on a microcontroller, and it was not practical to do it that way. So we looked a little more carefully at that, the minimization procedure. If you look back at the equations, you can see that if you pick a value for diffusivity, then it becomes a linear least squares problem. And the linear least squares, you are assured of a minimum. And so we picked a value for diffusivity, got a minimum, picked another value for diffusivity and got a minimum. And then looked for the place where we get the minimum of the minimums. And that place is the diffusivity we're looking for, and then we can come up here to the thermal conductivity that corresponds with that. And that worked beautifully for situations where we had no contact resistance. But as soon as we tried to make a measurement in soil, we get this kind of a result. Now, I've only shown you the diffusivities out to one, but that certainly covers the range. The minimum you would expect would be in that range, but if I showed you diffusivities farther out, we never do get a minimum in this. Indicating, and we tried this with all of the differential equations, all the solutions that we had to those differential equations, and it behaves about the same with all of them, indicating to me that none of them really solve that problem correctly. So what do we do then? Well, we went back to our old linear problem. We decided to go to long enough time solutions to that, to where we really could pretty well ignore those terms in time that make it nonlinear. But when you do that, you run into a problem. And the problem is that if there's any temperature drift at all, it has an enormous impact on the solution that you get and introduces big errors. One way around that, though, is to analyze both the heating and the cooling portion of the curve. And so I show here in blue the heating part and in magenta the cooling part. And the effect of the drift affects both of those, or affects the two of those things differently. You can see that the conductivity that we get from the heating part is a little different than the one that we get from the cooling part. The slopes are different. But if we put in a way to explicitly account for that underlying drift, or to a rough approximation, if we average these two values, we get a good estimate of the thermal conductivity. Notice also that the intercepts are different. And the reason for the difference in intercepts is that contact resistance, that when you're heating the probe, you get a shift in its temperature, that constant term in the Blackwell equation. So in looking at this, then one question is, how big are the errors? How long do you need to wait? And so these are some results from taking, from simulating temperature rise in a situation where I know the conductivity because I put it into the simulation. I know the contact resistance because I put it in, and I can then show the effect of the contact resistance and also know what the conductivity is that I'm supposed to see. And you can see here that plotted the error as a function of the essentially the time at which we hit fit the straight line to the data. And you can see where there's no contact resistance, these upper curves, that we always get a positive error. When there's a contact resistance, we always get the negative error. These positive errors are the result of ignoring those higher order terms. And as we go to longer times, those errors in both directions get smaller, and the errors tend to kind of compensate for each other. And so if we go out here to times 200 or 300 seconds and take the readings, why we get to some extent a compensation, and we probably get acceptably small errors. So here is a set of data on dry soil where those contact resistance errors tend to be largest. You can see for the short heating times that we get the 0.24 values, to some extent the one compensating ignoring the higher order terms, compensating for the resistance, but still the numbers are too low. As we go to longer times, we get readings that are larger. The dual needle probe we can make a measurement with, that doesn't have the same sort of contact resistance errors that the single needle probe has. You can see that as we get out to around 300 seconds heating time, that we're getting comparable results with the dual needle and the single needle. So our conclusions are that there are some great differential equation solutions to differential equations out there, but they just so far haven't been much help, to me at least, in solving this problem. That the inversions, when we try to do them, the nonlinear ones misbehave when we have this contact resistance problem. And so again, we've had trouble with that. That from our experience, it's best dealt with just by using long heating times, the solutions that were known 50 or 60 years ago. It's embarrassing that we haven't made progress on that. But when we do that, and this probably is progress, we use both the heating and the cooling solution to compensate for underlying errors, that helps. Thank you.